This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It is a major step, and it came as something of a surprise to the two authors of a report that the French president had commissioned, that they write a report to study the African artworks that were in French museums and whether or not some ought to be returned.
That's reporter Catherine Field. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, at least 22 people were killed in two militant attacks in Somalia today. Severe drought in Zimbabwe threatens livelihoods. And in Kenya, seven officials with the China Road and Bridge Corporation have been arrested for bribing investigators. We'll have these stories and more all ahead on Africa News Tonight. French President Emmanuel Macron is immediately returning 26 pieces of art and artifacts to Benin, the first objects in a five-year plan to restore art held in French museums to their African nations of origin. The surprise announcement comes following a promise that Macron made during a November 2017 speech in Burkina Faso as part of what he envisions as a new French engagement with Africa. It also coincides with the release of a report last Friday on the restitution of African cultural heritage. The art items identified by Beninese authorities were taken from the palace of Ben Hazen, the final king of what was then Dahomey. Reporter Catherine Field spoke with me about the art restoration at Benin and why this move is such a surprise.
It is a major step, and it came as something of a surprise to the two authors of a report that the French president had commissioned, that they write a report to study the African artworks that were in French museums and whether or not some ought to be returned. Now, they handed in this report just last Friday, and they told media here in France over the weekend that they actually thought it was just going to be a handover of the report, and then it would perhaps get lost in the sauce for a wee while. So they were quite surprised that right off the bat, the French president, Emmanuel Macron, said that France would restore without delay 26 works that had been taken by the French army in 1892 from the royal palaces in Dahomey, which is now part of Benin. And then the French president, Emmanuel Macron, went even further, and he said this is not going to be a symbolic return. This is the return of goods which should never have been looted in the first place. So, in particular, Emmanuel Macron has now said, okay, let's return these items. They're talking about as many as 70,000 objects which could be returned to places such as Benin, Cameroon, Senegal, all across areas where the French army were in place in the 19th century.
Well, this really is good news for the African countries. Of course, there are some challenges as well. For instance, I know some of the museums there in France, as well as the culture minister, are really concerned about countries with security issues.
There are two concerns at the moment that are coming from the culture ministry and also from some of the museums. In particular, let's look first at the Quai Branly Museum, which was only opened in 2006 here in Paris. Now, they will actually see a lot of their collection being returned. The director of the Quai Branly said that just over the weekend said there's a risk that museums could be hostages of this painful history of colonization. And he in particular wants now to talk about sharing this art and not delving into the emotions of whether they should have them or not. A former culture minister has warned that if this current government goes ahead with returning this artwork, then it's just going to empty some of France's museums of these artworks. On top of that, what was interesting in this report that these two authors put forward was they explained that you have to look at all these artworks in the context of Africa, and that these museums in Africa aren't the same as in Europe. These artifacts aren't necessarily on display all the time. Some of these thrones in particular are only put on show for several days of the year. On top of that, let's remember last year the French president was in Burkina Faso and he talked about how France wanted to be a partner in building these museums and making sure that these artworks were shown to people. So France has also said it's prepared to come up with funds to build or to help reconstruct or even renovate museums already in Africa, in these areas, so as these artworks are held in the proper conditions.
French President Macron is also asking for a European-wide participation in returning these artworks to Africa.
He has indeed, and he's asked that there be a get-together of some of the major museum curators here in Paris next year to talk about handing some of these back. And when we just look around, just two, for example, in Vienna, the Weltmuseum, they hold 37,000 artifacts from sub-Sahara Africa. If you look in, for example, Belgium, they've got a royal museum there that's got 180,000 objects from Central Africa. This is what Emmanuel Macron is talking about, that if everyone gets together and comes back, has a look, sets up these bilateral commissions whereby each country is in touch with another country in Africa, they go down the list, they ascertain which objects can be returned, in which state they'll be returned, how and when they'll be returned. That is how Europe's got to go ahead and not just have one country such as France leading this big change, really, in policy that's been in place for more than a century, that artwork has to be returned.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris. At least 22 people were killed in two militant attacks in Somalia today. In the first incident, al-Shabaab militants attacked the compound of a controversial cleric in the central Somalia town of Galkayo, killing him and at least 14 other people. Residents say they woke up today to huge explosions followed by heavy, sustained gunfire at the compound in the southern half of the town. Witnesses said a car bomb rammed into the gate, followed by suicide infantry who stormed the compound. Via an affiliate website, al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for killing the cleric. Meanwhile, 8 people were killed and 15 injured in a car bomb in Mogadishu just after midday. In more news around the continent, some villagers in one of Zimbabwe's driest areas are appealing for food and fear their livestock, their source of livelihood, will die because of the drought. As Columbus Mafunga reports for VOA from the region, the World Food Program is asking for funds to ensure food stability during the country's lean season.
In the dry Matabeleland region, animals are not only a sign of wealth, but a source of livelihoods. They are sold or exchanged for grain, especially corn, to prepare Zimbabwe's main staple food, sadza or isichwala, a thick porridge which is served with a relish. Crops usually fail due to low rains, so they depend on domestic animals. Standing next to a dry well which they had dug to get water for their cattle, 29-year-old Mpumelelo Dungen fears for his herd. This year's drought has been severe. Our cattle are dying because there's not enough water to drink. We travel long distances for cattle to survive. We are appealing to the government to intervene and solve our water problem and food as well. It must fix our dam so that we can survive. We want food and water for us and our cattle to survive. The villagers in this Gacheni Matopo area say the Marigwe Reservoir dried up, leaving them with no reliable source of water for their animals. 60-year-old Lina Mutlanga says she now walks for hours upstream with her cattle to find water. The donors keep saying they will come and fix the dam, Marigwe Reservoir, but they are not coming. There's no one who has come to fix it. So when the water is finished here, we have to go further down there for the cattle to get something to drink. The World Food Program says it needs about $75 million to ensure food stability for Zimbabwe's lean season for the next 6 months for dry places like Gacheni Matopo. Eddie Rowe, the WFP director in Zimbabwe, told VOA that about 2.4 million people in this southern African nation need food aid because of unusually long dry spells experienced during the last rainy season.
As we speak, we know that almost in every district, most of these households have run out of their harvests. And now they depend on the market. And we all know the problems we are facing with not just availability of commodities, but the prices in purchasing these basic commodities. In Zimbabwe, we have an estimated 28% of the rural population that is considered in a very challenging situation when it comes to access to and availability of food for this particular agricultural season, the 2018-2019.
USAID's Food for Peace program has given $22 million to the WFP to ease Zimbabwe's food insecurity. As a result, places like Gacheni Matopo in Matabeleland probably will get decent meals, but their animals will need water, and more drought is predicted. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
A joint police and army rescue operation is continuing on Lake Victoria for victims of a boat accident which claimed scores of Ugandan revelers. 32 have been confirmed dead, while 26 were rescued and about 60 remain unaccounted for. The boat is believed to have been carrying 120 people when it capsized on Saturday. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Alex Senyonga, one of the revelers on the ill-fated boat, is still coming to terms with the tragic accident.
I feel blessed, feel lucky, feel humbled, feel I'm still in shock. I think it has not sunk in yet how close it got. It's a feeling that is difficult to describe. The boat probably should not have moved, so it's a feeling of regret, something that is a mixed bag of emotions.
Shamila Nsereko also survived the accident. She describes the scene before the boat capsized.
It started all by, of course, it was losing balance, but we thought it was a normal thing because the guy had told us in the beginning, we've got to balance the boat. But then you're talking to people who are so drunk, some of them are drunk. Of course, they can't figure out that they're not balancing or something.
The boat, MV Cape Arm, capsized Saturday while headed for a party at Mutima Beach on Lake Victoria. Uganda police blame the accident on overloading and poor mechanical condition of the boat. Asman Mugenyi is the director of Uganda Police Operations.
We got information, even from the survivors, that our policemen tried to prevail on this group from proceeding because of the technical condition of the boat. The boat had been anchored for quite some time and it had no license.
With only 32 bodies retrieved so far and 26 survivors rescued, about 60 people still remain unaccounted. Dewa Kiki is a deputy army spokesperson. He says the rescue and search operations have been intensified.
We are having a number of divers that are in the waters, and we are adding in more divers from the Air Force section. The other ones are from Marine, and they will continue to retrieve more bodies.
Some are blaming the accident on the government's lax rules. Agrabah Jire is the Minister of State for Works and Transport. He admits that more is needed to streamline Uganda's water transport sector.
The Department of Marine in the Ministry of Works and Transport has just begun. It's just about a year old. And this department has got only 8 officers. They cannot be everywhere. We have over 800 landing sites in Uganda around Lake Victoria. Unfortunately, the need and desire to use the water transport has come in too fast, and it's gathering momentum beyond what we had anticipated.
Meanwhile, government has constituted a cabinet subcommittee to probe the incident. General Moses Ali is Uganda's first Deputy Prime Minister.
An investigation has been instituted into the matter, and a report will be issued as soon as it is ready. The aim is to ensure that such incidents do not happen again in the future.
Security has cordoned off Mutima Beach, the scene of the accident. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Kenya's The Daily Nation newspaper says seven officials with the China Road and Bridge Corporation have been arrested for bribing investigators looking into corruption tied to the Standard Gauge Railway. The arrest marked the first time Chinese officials have faced charges linked to the $3 billion SGR. The project has garnered controversy since the inaugural run between Kenya's two largest cities, Nairobi and Mombasa, in mid-2017. Agents with the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission arrested three Chinese nationals and four Kenyan officials. The Nation cited unnamed sources with the railway who claim the fraud under investigation amounts to about 1 million Kenyan shillings a day. The SGR has been tarnished by allegations of corruption and racism and concerns about its economic viability. In August, two top Kenyan officials were charged with corruption tied to land acquisition for the railway. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi acknowledged that the need for a more balanced law governing the activities of Egyptian non-governmental organizations and asked the parliament to amend it. However, Amnesty International calls on the Egyptian government to replace the law with another one that is in line with the Egyptian constitution to ensure the freedom of association. Mohamed Anwar Sadat is president of the Development and Reform Party and the former chairman of Human Rights Committee in the Egyptian parliament. He recently spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shanawi about the problems of the current law and the status of human rights in Egypt.
I personally have been writing and saying that we do appreciate what President Sisi have been calling for, reviewing and making the necessary amendments to the present law, which there have been a lot of criticism since it has been even discussed in the parliament, from local NGOs, from international NGOs, different governments, and that they were not happy with the articles of this law. The law actually does not encourage or does not help the civil society to be part of our, let's say, future plan for sustainable development, economically or even politically. So we are at the moment actually discussing those different articles which we believe that they do not really help civil society or NGOs or international foundations to do what they have to do to support the different communities in Egypt.
But Amnesty International called on the Egyptian government to replace the NGO law with another one that is in line with the Egyptian constitution to ensure the freedom of association. Do you agree that it needs to be replaced, not amended?
Well, we would have loved, of course, to be replaced, a complete change, a new draft. But it looks like that it will be amendments to the existing law. And we will see if we can manage to turn this present law to a new draft, which would be accepted or appreciated from all stakeholders, or we might insist on having a new draft. It's not clear yet.
You called for a society dialogue about the NGO law before issuing another one. Would the parliament offer the citizens of Egypt the opportunity to have a say in the new law before it's amended?
Now, honestly, most of the new laws or legislations which have been out of the parliament really was not having any kind of a real dialogue with all those concerned parties. But apart from the parliament now, doing this kind of dialogue with all the parties concerned, this is happening now, and we will see how this will end up. Hopefully that we will come to a law which will be really according to the articles in the Constitution.
As a former chairman of the Human Rights Committee in the Egyptian Parliament, how do you assess the current status of human rights in Egypt?
Honestly, human rights needs a lot of work in Egypt. There is still a lot of violations happening. No one can deny this fact. And we need to make a lot of reforms within our system, justice system, police system. We need to see new legislations whereby we can see equality, we can see a kind of freedom of expression. And this is what we have been calling for, that the government has to listen. We have to start reviewing our different laws. We have to open the political space where people can express their views, their opinion. And we have to call people or community leaders to participate on decisions related to their future, their life, and political issues or even economic issues of great importance to Egyptians nowadays. So I hope that this is what we will see, let's say, on the coming months, year or two.
That was Mohamed Anwar Sadat, president of the Development and Reform Party and the former chairman of HR Committee in the Egyptian Parliament. He spoke with my colleague, Mohamed El-Shenawi. The environment and rights organization Global Witness says an oil deal cheated Nigeria out of nearly $6 billion, an amount that is double its annual health care and education budgets. Global Witness issued a report today saying the Italian energy company Eni and the British-Dutch company Shell paid bribes to cut Nigeria's share of profits from a drilling project below normal levels. Both companies deny the allegation. Shell said it could not say more because the case is still pending, tried in an Italian court. The former Nigerian oil minister Dan Etete is among those facing charges. The two companies signed a deal with the Nigerian government in 2011 to begin drilling in an area in the Niger Delta. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, general elections are coming up in the Democratic Republic of Congo on December 23rd to determine a successor to President Joseph Kabila. An in-depth discussion on what's at stake in DRC's elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The 2019 VOA calendars are in. This year's calendar features a variety of scenic photos that capture U.S. byways, including beautiful photos of the Big Sur Coast Highway and even the historic Route 66. Tune in to Border Crossings at 1500 Universal to request a free calendar.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.